Hello, and welcome to Boss Madel, where I sit down and get real with some pretty amazing, creative women entrepreneurs. So grab yourself a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and get ready to be inspired. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 15th episode of Boss Madel. Hope you're all enjoying the start of your summer. I know I am. I really enjoy the slower pace that summer brings and the ability to spend more time with my kids and read some good books and travel a little bit. So I always love the beginning of summer and just being able to catch my breath. Today I sit down with the one and only Jamie Geller, and we talk about everything from her career to her work-life balance. We talk about the myth that there's no such thing as the ideal superwoman who does it all. Doesn't exist, ladies. And I love that Jamie is so candid and honest about everything. So without further ado, let me introduce Jamie. Jamie Geller is the only best-selling cookbook author who wants to get you out of the kitchen. Not because she doesn't love food, but because she has tons to do. As a bride who knew nothing, Jamie found her niche specializing in fast, fresh family recipes. Now, named the Queen of Kosher and the Jewish Rachel Ray, she's the creative force behind JamieGeller.com. Jamie and her husband live in Israel with her six super kids who give her plenty of reasons to get out of the kitchen quickly. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here, finally.
I know. We had a couple of misses and now we're connected. It's so great to be talking to you. I spent Pesach in Israel at the Waldorf, and Jamie was there, as well as the previous year. And I'm laughing because I think I sound pretty articulate on this podcast, but you've actually seen me in the morning pre-coffee. I don't know what I said to you. I don't even know if I was incoherent.
Well, you kept apologizing that you were pre-coffee, but you looked gorgeous and you were speaking very coherently. So it was all in your head. Yes, yes, we're completely presentable and you should always feel confident to carry on a conversation even before the caffeine.
That's good to know. But yeah, we're at a whole level of like being comfortable, because I feel like once you've seen me pre-caffeine, yeah, you know, there's like...
Oh, we have seen each other at every stage. You spend two Pesachs together and you were like besties already.
Yes, exactly. So I know all about you, but if you can take listeners back a little bit and tell them how you started your business, how did you go from working as a TV producer to whipping up delicious recipes in your kitchen?
So I became pregnant with my first child, and I went on maternity leave, and I never expected, I didn't grow up in it with religious, and I had just one sister. We're 2.5 years apart. So it's never like, you know, I had a lot of younger kids in the house. I never babysat growing up. I always worked. I worked in my father's office, actually, you know, growing up. So I never like was around a lot of kids, and we didn't have a lot of nieces or nephews. It just wasn't like that. We were kind of the youngest in the family. And so I didn't expect to fall in love with being a mom. Sure. And when I went on maternity leave and I had my first child, you know, my grandmother said this about my mother, and my mother said this about me: when a child is born, a mother is born. And yes, I just could not bear the thought of leaving my baby and working in television and production. It's nonstop. You know, it's 12-hour days are a short day, 14, 16-hour days, 18-hour days. And I couldn't bear the thought of that type of schedule. First of all, at all leaving my child, but then, you know, knowing that like I might not even see her during the week if not for, you know, Shabbos. So sure. I just started to think about other things. Like, I'm like, I can't go back. I can't go back. I can't go back, you know? And this was like, I mean, this is a career that was a flourishing that I fully expected, you know, that would, you know, I would continue till 120 doing. And so when I first got married, I didn't know how to cook at all, because I was like this very well-trained marketing executive, TV producer, professional. Right. And, you know, in Manhattan, I'd use my oven for storage. And so over the course of that first year of marriage, through trial and error, I had suddenly turned out like very like respectable food, which was like a big, you know, accomplishment for me. And I would host and I would do all of this while working these crazy hours and commuting back and forth to Manhattan and my job at HBO. And so I learned not only to cook, but to cook simple and easy recipes. So when I was on maternity leave, you know, my husband said to me, you should write a cookbook. Like the things I was doing, the food was good, but it was the way I was doing it. The fact that I simplified the process and sort of demystify the process for those who either didn't have the skill set, didn't have the interest, or didn't have the time. And he kind of thought it was a good idea for a cookbook. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. My baby will do tummy time. I'll like write this little cookbook here. We'll cook together. It'll be so cute. And that's kind of how it all began.
Wow. Now this little project of yours or hobby turned into something so much more. In fact, when I was a newlywed, I purchased your cookbook, your first cookbook.
Wow.
And I did not know how to boil water.
Yes.
My mother called and said, have you burnt the house down yet?
Yeah, totally. So supportive.
Yes, exactly, right? And I had this fear around food and cooking. Why do you think women are so afraid to get in the kitchen if they haven't had the experience?
Right. I think that that's what it is. It's simply fear of the unknown, right? My mother never grew up cooking. I didn't cook growing up. I didn't have the experience. So it's simply that fear of the unknown. And I think it's only for someone like you and I that we didn't have that experience. There are plenty of kids, and like my own kids will not be scared. You know, they're growing up in the kitchen with me. So it's all about that fear of the unknown. And I think that that cripples us as not just women, but as people in whatever area you choose, you know, to have not had that, you have not had that experience in.
Sure. Do you think sometimes we tend to be a little hard on ourselves? We have a perfectionist streak. And so we are even afraid of trying something new or something a little more simple, especially when it comes to entertaining, we're hard on ourselves. And do you think that can, you know, sometimes deter us from getting in the kitchen?
Well, I think that there's such a pressure. It's not just that we're hard on ourselves. I think there's this sort of communal pressure to put out these lavish types, very creative, something different in the presentation. And I think it's not just like self-imposed, but I do think that it's an issue, you know, within the community. And it's funny because about more than 5 years ago, maybe even 8 years ago, I remember people telling me they didn't actually like getting these magazines that showed all these new things because it felt this like, I don't know, it was a little bit overwhelming.
Sure.
For women. And we're expected to do, and we do have to do so much. We have to be wives. That's a full-time job. We have to be mothers. That's beyond a full-time job. Some of us actually have careers out of the home. And then for those that don't have this pressure to do a tremendous amount of social, communal, you know, sort of dedication of their time to whatever it is, the school, the synagogue, et cetera. And so there's a lot that we're juggling. And when you put out the food or when you're entertaining, it's such a reflection of you, and you're scared to fail. You really are.
Sure. Yes, I've been there, and I'm sure many women have as well. So that's why your philosophy is so refreshing, because what you essentially do is you take easy to follow recipes. I love your videos. You just, you know, there's an excitement and a happiness around cooking rather than the fear of it. Is there a common mistake that women make when it comes to cooking, when they actually do get in the kitchen and start cooking?
Right. So there's two things. One I'll speak about like sort of on the spiritual sense, and one I'll speak about on the practical sense. One is we have to be happy when we cook. Okay. It's just, if you know what that's like you can parent your child, and if you're angry, you're mad or whatever, like it just, whatever your message you're trying to get across, it's just not going to come across way, you know, in a good way.
So true.
Try to be calm. Try to find the joy in it. If you don't love cooking, then try to find the joy in the fact that you'll be entertaining, or the fact that you'll be serving this food to your family. And you need to sort of have like a great vibe of like love and positive energy around it. Because if you're mad or angry and banging around the kitchen and like, you know, like it sounds like a war in there, you know, like it's just the food's not going to come out good. So there really is a spiritual component to just bringing joy into your life and everything that you do. And that does includes the kitchen. And then otherwise, I feel like I just refuse, even after 10 years in this industry, after the fact that there are many people that haven't read my books, right? So they think you're a cookbook author. They think I'm a gourmet chef. Okay. I always say I just play one on TV. I never, you know, went to, you know, culinary school here. So I just learned on the job, and they expect so much from me, just me. So first of all, I don't get invited out, and people can't wait to come here. Do you know what I'm saying? And I refuse to succumb to the trap. And I say that to the other women as well. Don't try to overdo it. Okay. You know, like I do basics, and I give some simple tips for serving it in a very pleasant, elegant kind of way. There's a Yiddish word called ungepatscht, which is like overdone and over fussy. I don't do that. The idea is to just serve good, comforting food. Okay, so not a lot of ingredients, not a lot of like over the top, you know, I'm not twirling, you know, a cucumber into a rose. It's just, you're not going to find me doing that. And so, and that's what, just try not to overdo it. Try not to overwhelm yourself. And the very last tip is also too many dishes. A lot of times people think when they're entertaining, they have to have 5 salads and 3 mains and 6 sides and then 8 desserts. And like, you know, it's not a bar mitzvah. It's like dinner, you know, even if it's a Shabbat meal or a Shabbos meal. So just simple, easy, like simplify the process for yourself and bring joy into the kitchen.
Yeah, that's funny. That reminds me, because I do interior design and so many women have apologized to me for how their house looks first thing in the morning when I come in. And I'm thinking, do you think I don't have Cheerios all over my kitchen floor? We're all in the same boat. So that pressure we put on ourselves, you know, to do everything to a perfect level, it doesn't serve us. So I love that you really try to combat that with joy and a happiness and an ease in making food.
I love your website, by the way, and your interior design. I'm obsessed with your portfolio, and you need to keep updating it because I love it.
I'm in the middle of doing it right now.
Okay, good, good. I can't wait. Let me know when it's updated.
Will do. So was there a particular fear or challenge that you faced when starting or growing your business?
I'm still facing them every single day, challenges, every single day. I'm about 11 years now into this process, and so much has changed. Yeah. First, it was cookbooks. And then I remember making the move to having a website, because you had to have a website, and then you had to have a Facebook page, and now you have to be on Instagram. And the industry, sort of the climate, has changed in terms of the type of access that people want to you. And I remember starting, and I think why I was so successful initially is I wrote the cookbook like an autobiography, and I shared so much of myself, and I bared so much of my soul and my mistakes and my feelings and my experiences. That was in the written form, and it was very, it was just like a package. You know, I was very able much to edit that and to share that and what I wanted to share. And it was very much soul bearing, but like to an extent. And now I actually find my most current challenge now is social media, how much to share, you know? And, you know, in the first book, I didn't even put pictures of my kids. And now it's like it's a totally different world. And I think throughout the process, it's always about how do you innovate? How do you not just stay on trend, but perhaps also create the trend? And, you know, I was the first to write the cookbook like an autobiography. I was the first to do what we call now, which didn't have a term at the time, but native advertising, where you would do product placement within the recipe. So you'd pick the products that you love, that you recommend, which has come so commonplace now for social media, but it wasn't at the time. Like, no one was doing that in their cookbooks and the recipes. I was the first to do cooking videos in the religious form world online. You know, always in my background, I always say you can take the TV girl out of the TV, but you can't take the TV producer out of the girl. But then how do you keep innovating? Things are moving so much faster now, and technology has come to a point that it's so accessible and so plug and play. So everyone could do what was once only available to the people that perhaps had a certain level of skill or a certain level of, you know, cash flow or income to support, you know, the visions that they had. So I'm always looking for things that are different. And so now I am working on 2 or 3 different projects. But it's not easy to get certain things off the ground. Some things I've been working on for 4 years, some for 2 years, and something was a new idea I had yesterday, you know? So,
yes.
So that's.
No, that's great that you're honest about that. I think we often have this image that, you know, once you've made it at a certain level, things just kind of flow naturally. It's really nice to be able to share that with listeners so that other women know that it's a daily process, I think, for most women. It really is.
Yeah, and from a business perspective, I mean, I think one of the challenges is being, and you could probably really relate to this, is being a creative, but then having to run the business. It's 2 different sides of the brain to be, you know, an entrepreneur whose actual business is being a creative. It's like, and so, I mean, things like payroll, things like the financials, QuickBooks, ew.
Oh, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was just saying, and like thinking about budgeting, like, I love to work without a budget. Like my husband always says, you know, like be your budget cat, champagne taste, you know, like I just like, I'm so, I want to do so much. And then there's the reality of what, you know, sort of the budgets are and what there's a lot of behind the scenes people think. I'll speak about me specifically. I'm in the kitchen. I'm barely in the kitchen except for when I have to actually create a new recipe, or I'm doing a new book, or particularly like a new project that requires 90% of my time is not in the kitchen. And 80% of that time is on the business side of things.
Yes. Yes. That makes a lot of sense. Jamie, is there a common myth about motherhood, work, you know, being a woman, or any topic that you wish to dispel?
I so despise, I won't use the word hate because my mother and my husband say I should not hate anything.
Okay.
Bad word. I really despise the concept of the superwoman. I just think that no one is doing it all, like absolutely no one. And people are always, and they know that, and we could be told that a million and one times, but bottom line is you're just looking over at your neighbor or someone else on social media, and you just think they are doing it all, even when they share that they're not, right? So then there's this whole movement of people who are like going overboard to share the fact that they're like not doing it all, and there are Cheerios on the floor and all this kind of stuff. People just don't see it, and they don't believe it, and they don't understand the internal struggles of someone. Literally, I say, like, they teach you how to juggle when you go to the circus, but they should teach you that to be a mom. I mean, it's just a juggling act, and I feel like it's like, I just moved from fire to fire to fire, putting out this one, and this one, this one, and this one starts again, and I'm just like, you know? So I just think that don't look at anyone and think, she has a career, she has kids, she has a husband, she's successful, she has it all. Everyone is doing that same juggling act to their extent.
How do you think women can cultivate that kind of that inner compass or that inner sense of self-worth? Is it just sometimes disconnecting from social media or talking to a good friend or finding a role model? How
all three of those. You figured it out. All three of those. I think we must. Yeah, so obviously if the listeners do keep the Sabbath and their Shomer Shabbos, mm-hmm. so then we have that built-in disconnect from social media, but I would suggest that you need more than that.
Yeah.
So the one thing that I do is to be present when I'm present. I literally do not bring the phone, whether it's to the dinner table or to when I'm hanging out with my girls at night or when I'm talking to my husband. Like, it is just, it's there's a reflex. You don't even realize what you're doing, and mid-sentence, you are distracted. So it's simply that of, like, you know, being present when you're present and taking time off of social outside of the obligatory, okay, we're not, you know, on social media on Shabbat.
Right.
So that's that. Then I think connecting in person. Social and technology and texting and WhatsApp and email has allowed us to even keep up with our friends in a non-personal way. And I have just, I started this last week with my sister-in-law, who's one of my best friends, and my matchmaker. I just saw her yesterday. She is one of my best friends too. She's the one who set me up with my husband. And, you know, we've been friends over 15 years, but I met her as just really, you know, someone to set me up with my husband. And these in-person meetings, the strength, the inspiration, the support that we give each other face-to-face. Even now, you and I are talking face-to-face, and it's so much better than, you know, even like we were saying before on the phone. So those import, those human connections,
sure.
We're just sacrificing so much of that because of the ease that technology has given us and allowing us to really feel like we're connected. And it's wonderful that we are, but don't miss out on those opportunities for, like, the physical human connections with friends, right? Beyond your husband and beyond your children.
Yes.
And, you know, sort of that women's group. And then a role model. I love that you always must have someone that you can go to that's for advice, that you want to model your life after, that you see your goals manifested in reality in that person. And as long as you don't idolize that role model, but understand they're human and have someone to go to, I think it's it. You gave all three answers, so we're good. I can go now.
That's great. You know, if success were a recipe, what would be your three key ingredients? And for everyone, that's very personal.
Sure, sure. Gosh, you're asking all the hard questions. I would say maybe it's one ingredient times three, like okay. emuna. It's just faith.
Yes.
And you need to understand that everything we do are physical efforts in this world, but everything comes from above. Everything, it's the blessing, it's the luck, the mazal of the situation. It's some of it's God-given talent that was given to you. And of course you can hone and of course you can increase it. But, like, you know, some people, you know, so it's that faith in God and knowing that everything comes from Him. That's my recipe for success.
Yeah.
Because success is happiness. And so whether you actually make it or fail at the particular task at hand, it's knowing that even that was from God. And so, and then in that is your sense of inner peace and your happiness. So that's faith times three.
So true. JB, you are a super involved mom. and just really, I mean, I love that you've shown your kids in cookbooks. It's so beautiful. And how do you manage your role, your numerous roles as wife, mother, entrepreneur, and how do you feel motherhood has changed you?
Well, definitely, like I spoke about before, that it was not my inclination. I didn't love babies. I wasn't into kids. I just didn't grow up like that. And so
interesting, because you are so warm and so, do you know what I mean?
Like, thank you. I feel a warmth for people,
right?
But sort of being a kid person is a different kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I just didn't have those experiences. Like I said, I didn't babysit. I didn't grow up in a religious, you know, neighborhood or place where there were lots of little kids around. Like all of our kind of neighbors had one or two kids that were like mine and my sister's age. I just didn't grow up around that. Mm-hmm. So I always said, when the child was born, the mother was born, and it changed my life completely. And it took away that selfishness and self-centeredness that I had lived with. Just, I don't mean it in a negative way. When, you know, you don't have children, your life is about yourself. It's the me and it's the I. And it's putting that aside for something else that's so much greater than yourself. I think it comes with it such a responsibility I think that's why we're here on this earth, to mold the next generation and to make sure that they are healthy, happy, contributing members of our world and of society. So it's like knowing that then forces you to be a better person and forces you to be, you know, both lead by example and make sure that you're instilling and saying, you know, the right things. So motherhood has changed me in so tremendously. I feel like I was never like, oh, I'm never going to have kids, but who knows if it happened for me, it didn't happen for me. It wasn't a focus of my life growing up. And it has been like now my purpose for life, you know, my purpose of being a mother. It's like my whole purpose for being, I love it so much. So yeah, it's changed me immensely.
Wow. I think a key component that every mother needs in their life is some form of self-care. I'm sure you're super busy. You've got a really busy schedule. What do you do for self-care, or what does self-care look like for you?
That's so great. Okay, so twofold. One is, I think it actually, I'm going to like, self-care again is very much a focus on the I, and I do think that's important. And so I'll do things like I mentioned, like getting together in person with those people that are like my best friends and my rocks and my inspirations. It's every once in a while. I mean, when I was single, I did this all the time. Every once in a while, I love like a facial or something like that, you know, just like that sort of real materialistic, just give it to me, like, you know, kind of thing, go to a spa type of day, massage. I love, love, love. And then feeding myself spiritually, like that is so important to me. So I listen to Torah anytime, every single night as I'm falling asleep. And I try to do it, like I do a lot of commuting back and forth, let's say to Jerusalem or to Tel Aviv, or even I'll download a Torah anytime class, like for the plane, you know, and I'll listen to it like, you know, on the plane. So that kind of like feeding that spiritual sense. But there's another aspect of self-care, I think, so much as being a mother, is we miss out on those opportunities to connect with our husbands in the way that we need to. And so we make a point to get away together. I know that's not self-care, because self is about the I, but feeding that relationship is probably one of the most important things you can do for your personal happiness, for your connection with your soulmate, and for what you're modeling for your children, right? Like a happy mom and a happy family and a great, we know what it's like when there's tension in the home. And so how do we connect? And we do connect by just getting away together as much as we can, just the two of us. So whether it's the birthday, his birthday, my birthday, and our anniversary, those are kind of the obligatory times, like three times a year. If it's simply dinner, or if it's simply coffee, you know, or if it's just something to separate yourself, get yourselves out of the home. If you can go to a hotel, it doesn't have to be like that. You don't have to have the budget for that. Just going the two of you to coffee or for a walk in the park or just a walk together is amazing, you know?
Oh, I so agree. I live in Los Angeles, which is the helicopter parent culture, which it means it's all about your child all the time. This is in the, you know, more of the non-religious or non-Jewish culture, but this idea that everything else goes on the back burner and it's not healthy. And yeah, even as a young mom, it took me a while to figure out that balance of, okay, happy home is really where it starts at.
Yeah, it really does. That's everything stems from a happy home. And so we spoke about earlier, simply as just being happy while you cook, you need to bring joy into the home in every single thing that you do. And if your relationship is not solid or sound, or you're annoyed or you're frustrated or there's tension, it seeps into everything and the kids feel it. And I mean, having grown up in a family that my parents were married, they were divorced, they married each other again, now they're divorced again. I'm saying, wow. Yeah. So I always say, yeah, we're products of the second marriage of the same people to each other. Okay. And so I know the effects, like, and it's, you're setting your children up for healthy relationships as well. And so you must invest in that. Let's call it like couples care. We've got the self-care, like get your massage, get your facial, go out with your girlfriend for coffee. And then like, there's the couples care where you need to invest in that as well.
Right. Because you don't have to be your kid's best friend, but you want to be your husband's best friend.
Yeah. I actually don't think you should be your kid's best friend personally. I think that that's like such a misnomer. I grew up in that situation where my mom was my best friend, and it so much blurs the line of what that parent-child relationship is supposed to be, from an aspect of respect, from an aspect of being able to just sort of lead them and educate them in the right way. The lines should not be blurred. You are not best friends with your kids. You can be there for them. They can. You need to be there for them, so they should feel comfortable to tell you anything. I don't mean to create a distance, but I mean to create this. That's a different relationship. But your husband's, that's a friendship that should just deepen and grow over time.
Right. That's so true. Now, you mentioned spirituality. It's interesting. You know, you have been very open about your whole journey. And I have found that many women of my age or generation that are possibly religious from birth, sometimes we tend to look at our spiritual life purely out of habit. You know, there wasn't a lot of decision making in where we are. It's kind of, we were born into it. And so it sometimes tends to seem just kind of like habitual. We're just doing it. What would you recommend, you know, for listeners in terms of finding happiness in their spiritual journey, finding passion? Is there something that you would suggest?
I don't want to make it like a misconception. I suffer from the same thing, you know, so I try to pray daily, you know, in the morning.
Yeah, okay.
And how many times do I do that? And like, I wasn't even emotionally, mentally present. Like, I think I solved 10 problems while I was actually like, you know, saying the words.
Right.
So we all suffer from that, from doing things out of rote, out of habit, you know, without even being present, like we spoke about before. Mm-hmm. But I think for me personally, I can't give advice, you know, other than what I'm trying to do for myself, is having a focus on growth. And, you know, as women, professionals, entrepreneurs, a lot of times we really invest in continuing education, right? We'll take online courses in the areas of our business that we think that we want to excel in or grow in, or new directions or new verticals that we want to open. You have to have this, it's like it's a business of spirituality. You need to stay current. You need to stay on top of things. You need to continue to educate yourself. And so that's, for me, I mentioned Torah Anytime simply because that's a website. I don't work for them or anything. You know, I feel like maybe they should hire me because like I love them. Yeah. So I just feel like that allowed access to, I can't get myself with my schedule to an in-person class on a regular basis. You know, I happen to live in a beautiful religious community where there are many, you know, speakers on a regular basis, but I can't get myself to these classes. What if I have a meeting here, I have a meeting there, I have a deadline here. I'm working, and I'm a full-time mom.
Sure.
It has allowed me to sort of feed myself in both helping to inspire, to give me strength, and to continue to grow, like, you know, through these online courses, basically. That's, you know, turning time. So I just feel like a focus on continued growth. And how do you do that? You do that through more knowledge and through education. And so the same thing for the business of spirituality. We need to invest in it if we expect to get anything out of it.
You know,
how much time do you put into your business? How much time do you put into your kids? It's all according to the effort that you put in. So if we're not really putting in effort and we're just going through the motions,
yeah,
we can't expect to get anything out of it.
Yeah. How true. That's great advice. So Jamie, we're going to take a little bit of a different turn now. We're going to talk about some of the fun aspects of food. What in the food world is currently, you know, trending, and what are you excited about?
I am so excited that Israeli food is having its moment worldwide. Yes. And I'm not even talking in the kosher space.
Sure.
It is like restaurants are popping up from Atlanta to Berlin, okay? It is so incredible. And that to me is super exciting. And what I love about that is that really what is Israeli food. I mean, it's very Middle Eastern influenced and North African influenced, but the truth is, I mean, Israel is the ultimate melting pot. It's, you know, cultures from all over the world have come and converged here. So I'm even taking a step further and I'm calling it the sort of like Jewish comfort food. So yes. Whether for you that means a kugel or falafel or some sort of modern Israeli fusion of taking things tahini and amba, which is a mango curry sauce, which is like sort of these, what I'll call the Middle Eastern, the Israeli mustard, and bringing those, you know, to the palates of the American or European diners. That to me is what's so exciting. And it's exciting because it's our food that's making an impact worldwide.
Yes. Yes. I love that. I'm going to ask you a couple of your favorites in regards to food. Do you have a favorite spice?
Hold on. It's technically not exactly spice, but it kind of is a spice. Salt.
Yes.
I feel like people do not use it enough. First of all, especially if they're cooking kosher, they're scared to oversalt things. That's not that you must actually salt. Salt and kosher salt specifically yes. brings out the flavor of the food. If you're using kosher salt, it doesn't make your food salty. It enhances the flavor of the food that you're cooking with. Very often, I'm just cooking with salt and pepper. Now, of course, do I have some of my favorite go-tos? And I love cumin. I love sumac. I love, my parents are Hungarian. My parents are from Transylvania. So right. paprika and every version of paprika is in my kitchen, you know, but bottom line is so often sometimes it's really only kosher salt.
Yes. Do you have a favorite kitchen gadget?
Tongs. I feel like they're an extension of my arm. I like do everything with tongs. I love them. Tongs.
Do you have a favorite book? It could be a cookbook or just any book that you enjoy reading.
Oh, okay. I can't ever pick favorites like that. So all I can do is tell you the last one, you know, that okay. I just
Sounds
read.
Good.
And so I read 2 biographies recently. This is another way that I feel like grow with spiritually and feed my spirituality is I read biographies of wonderful people. So I read the biography of Rebbetzin Batsheva Kanievsky.
I read the biography
of Rebbetzin Henny Machlis. And I recently reread the biography of the Vilna Gaon. So I just try to take, some people can read these biographies and start to feel less than a person because how can we match up? But to me, I just try to take some of the aspirational small things about them. I love reading real true stories. And so those are the last sort of 3. So I'm into biographies.
Yes. And the 2 on the woman I read, and they are really, really inspirational.
Yeah.
Do you have, okay, this is probably going to be impossible for you to choose, but do you have a favorite food? If there was one dish you could have on demand, what would it be?
O-M to the G.
Yeah.
I can't, I mean, can I just like go crazy right now?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, I love olive oil. I love avocados. I think they're God's gift to this world. Yes. I'm obsessed with Mexican food. You're probably so lucky living in LA. I'm obsessed with Mexican food. After which is Chinese, simply because it's really hard to get good Chinese in Israel. And I'm just like craving a normal egg roll, not made from a Moroccan cigar wrapper.
Yes.
So do I sound like a pregnant woman? I'm not pregnant.
No, this is fun.
And dessert is I'm not a big baker. Anyone who really follows me knows any of the desserts I make simply sometimes are no bake or really simple, like throw it all in one bowl kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But dessert is my favorite course. I got that from my mom. She used to order when we went out to restaurants, chocolate mousse first. Mm-hmm. So she would have room for dessert. Cause why do you want to stuff in dessert when there's no room left?
I like that.
Yeah. So I'm like totally into any kind of something sweet, creamy and, full of carbs. Yeah.
Love that. Maybe we could talk for hours. Really. We're
totally.
Actually, getting towards the end of the interview.
Coming? Are you coming? Okay,
yes.
So we'll talk again.
Yes, we're already booked. So
yeah, amazing.
So can you tell listeners where they can find you? In case they have not heard of you or don't know where to find you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for the opportunity. Follow me on my website, jamiegeller.com. And then on social, on Facebook and on Instagram, it's also Jamie Geller. And then we also have this handle both on Facebook and on Instagram called Julish by Jamie. And that's where we do all of those really fun, tasty style, just sort of hands videos. They're about a minute or less, and they're all featuring Jewish comfort food. So when you go to jamiegeller.com, we have over 10,000 free recipes of everything. If you're looking for, like, you know, summer smoothies or simple sides, or, you know, dinner tonight, 5-ingredient chicken dinners, or, you know, some lunches you can make in, you know, 5 minutes flat, that's everything you'll find on Jamie Geller, plus the Jewish comfort food. And then on, when you follow Jewish by Jamie, that's where you'll just see those, like, 1 minute hands videos featuring Jewish comfort food. And so that's like your thing, then go there.
That's great. I just love watching your videos. They are so fun. I've been a fan for years, and I keep I'm also looking forward to the projects that you mentioned. So we will keep all the listeners posted.
Amazing. So maybe I'll come back when we've finally launched something. Yes.
Yes. Maybe we'll do the next one in Israel.
Oh my gosh, we should do it. Yes. Okay. So hopefully I need a blessing from you that something or all of them are going to actually come to fruition before Passover. And then we should do it in person in Passover from Israel. That would be so cool.
That is great. With a good glass of wine or coffee, whichever time of the day.
And some dessert.
Yes.
Totally, totally.
This is great.
Okay, amazing.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening in on our thoughtful, authentic conversation today. Stay tuned for next week's episode and make it a great one.